Well, I wonder how many of you like leftovers. I came from a home that we were pretty conservative in our expenses. We had to be because we didn't have a large income. My parents didn't. And so for me to go and hear someone say, "I don't like leftovers," was startling to me. I just thought that if you didn't eat it all, you put it in the refrigerator and maybe not the next meal, at least the next day, you probably warmed that up and maybe Dad took it to lunch or something like that. My wife has been really good about disguising leftovers. I've discovered that she can put cheese and maybe add a little flavoring or something, and I forget that it was even leftovers. So she does really good with with leftovers. So I say that to say this. I would like to take the leftovers of the thought we started this morning and take that a little bit further, maybe give us a few more details. I wrote on the board, blessing or mercy. And my burden today is that we would recognize where our spiritual status is. If we're working in a mercy to mercy experience with the Lord, or if we're really in a place where His blessings can really cause us to prosper spiritually. The verse we started with this morning is in Proverbs 10, where it says, "The blessing of the Lord it maketh rich, and He addeth no sorrow with it." You know, I don't know what it's like to be temporally rich, but I believe that I've experienced some of the riches of spiritual blessings. And I've experienced enough of it, I want more. I want the Lord's blessings in my heart and in my life. So I find that many times when we just barely are scraping by in our spiritual experience, we feel like that every time the Lord has mercy on us, we call it blessed. We feel blessed. And it's not that we shouldn't feel gratitude for what the Lord does for us. I just wanted to set our sights for something a little higher than just barely the Lord having mercy on us. So I want to turn to Jonah. All of us here, I would venture, know the story of Jonah, a little book in the Old Testament. And Jonah was a man that was sent down to prophesy to the Assyrian king in a place called Nineveh. And Jonah was a man that he didn't really like the job God gave him. And I'm not real sure why he felt so arrogant to argue with the Lord, it seemed like. But we know how this happened. Jonah went after resisting and getting thrown in the sea and swallowed by the fish and spit out on dry land. And he went in about a day's journey because it was a large city. And he preached, he delivered the message, and they listened. Wouldn't that be a good thing today? You know, if we could fill the building up with people that really needed Jesus and you could preach a salvation message and they would listen, wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? I can't imagine a better experience in the chapel than for the chapel to be full of people that needed Jesus. And when you told them they needed Him and how to get a hold of Him, they said, "Well, that's what we want." So Jonah went in, prophesied, preached to these people, and they said, "We're going into desperate moves here. We don't want to be destroyed. We're going to do anything we possibly can to get God to change the outcome of this prophecy." So what happened? God didn't destroy Nineveh. You know, Jonah got his feelings hurt. He got to feeling bad because Nineveh was spared. And it begins in the fourth chapter where we want to read. It said, but it displeased Jonah exceedingly, and he was very angry. Well, if Jonah was here and I could talk to him, I guess I would want to know what put you in the place to be angry that men were spared destruction. It's kind of like wishing that your neighbor's house would catch on fire or something. Because maybe they done a little something that displeased you. That's not what we're here for. We want other people to be blessed. We want God to have mercy on our neighborhood. That's what we pray for. And we want God to extend mercy. We want them to see the goodness of God and be converted. And here, Jonah was not happy. And it says, and he prayed unto the Lord and said, I pray thee, O Lord, was not this my saying when I was yet in my country? Oh, the arrogance of this. Lord, didn't I tell you that I knew that you wouldn't do this if they showed any signs of remorse? He's talking back to God. He said, he prayed unto the Lord and said, I pray thee, O Lord, was not this my saying when I was yet in my country? Therefore I fled before unto Tarshish, for I knew that thou art a gracious God and merciful, slow to anger and of great kindness, and repentest thee of the evil. I am very thankful that I serve a God like that. I'm glad that I serve a God that is willing to have mercy on mankind. And I am so thankful we have this story in the Old Testament. These were pagan people. They were not God's chosen people. And they got the message that the God of all creation is going to destroy our city because we're wicked. And they turned around. And God had mercy on them. But I'm here today. Don't you know they felt blessed? They felt like this is a reward from the Lord, from God, to not be destroyed. But you know there's something better than that. And I want us to catch a glimpse tonight of what it takes to really be blessed. Not just the blessings of having mercy showed to us, but of really being blessed. So, I'd like to turn now to 1 Kings, the third chapter. And just in turning there, I want us to think about something else. The blessing of life that the folks there in Nineveh, the Assyrian people, realized by them repenting was not a direct blessing. It was a blessing of God's mercy. Okay? So I'm going to start out what I'm going to try to share with us here in more detail this evening by just making a statement. I believe that blessing is an undeniable divine compensation for faithfulness. All right? So that's what I believe. I believe that blessings are an undeniable divine compensation for being faithful, for being true to God. So I'd like to turn here in 1 Kings, the third chapter, and I want us to get some details here. The detail here is that Solomon has become king, and he has approached this responsibility of being king over Israel with a sense of humility, I believe. And I want to pick up reading in the 7th verse. He says, and now, O Lord my God, thou hast made thy servant king instead of David my father, and I am but a little child. I know not how to go out or come in. And thy servant is in the midst of thy people which thou hast chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered or counted for multitude. Give, therefore, thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who is able to judge this, thy so great a people? And the speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. So I want to pause here a moment, and I want us to recognize that Solomon, although he ended up on a different tone, Solomon started out on the right foot, in the right direction. He was very sincere. He had a humble heart before the Lord. He recognized his incapability, and God had spoke to him, presented himself, and said, Solomon, what is it that you want from me as you begin your reign over this United Kingdom of Israel? And he basically was given, it was almost like a multiple choice blessing here. What do you want? And Solomon, as he considered this, he recognized that the most valuable thing he could have is the wisdom and the discernment to be able to rule this kind of people properly and effectively, and where God's people could prosper. The most amazing thing is in when somebody that's just as human as anyone else can be able to expound the word to the point that others in the congregation can get a hold of something that's a blessing to them. I believe it's something that only God can help us do. It's not because some people are just talented in themselves, although there are talented people out there. I believe when God's anointing can rest on a message, it's because of His blessing, and I want to be in that place. I want to be in the place that God's blessing can be on the message to where it actually is effective in men's hearts. If that's not there, then the Lord can't really get the glory out of it. I'm not up here to thump on my chest or anything like that. I want us to prosper in our souls and in our spirits. So he says here, Lord, I need wisdom to know how to be the leader here. And it says the speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked for this thing. And God said unto him, because thou hast asked this thing and hast not asked for thyself long life, neither has asked riches for thyself, nor has asked the life of thine enemies, but has asked for thyself understanding to discern judgment. Behold, I have done according to thy words. Lo, I have given thee a wise and understanding heart. So there was none like thee before thee, neither shall there any arise like unto thee. So what does that mean? When we humbly approach the Lord, present ourselves as, Lord, I want to be your servant. I want to be willing to do what you'd have me. I'm in a position that I want you to use me. I'm not bringing you, I'm not crying out for mercy because I've been misbehaving. I'm coming to you because I'm in the place that I can be effective because I know I got my life cleaned up, but I want you to know I can't do it in myself. I need some help. Solomon was in a place that God could put his blessings on. I want us to be in that place instead of saying, Lord, it's me again. I've messed up. Can you have mercy on me one more time? I would like for us to get this vision of being in a place, Lord, you gave me victory over the past. You gave me victory over the things that's crowding all around me. But I really don't know what you have now for me. And that's where Solomon was. And when he was in that place, God blessed him with wisdom like no one else had ever had. Had there been wise men before Solomon? Yeah. You think about the wisdom that men had to build that Tower of Babel. Took a lot of wisdom. You think about all of the things that back not so many years before this, well, it was a few years before this, that the wisdom of Aholiab and Abihu that built the things. No, that's not. That's what's that? Bezalel and what's the other name? Yeah, Aholiab and Bezalel, that built all of the fixtures for the tabernacle and made all of those curtains and tapestries and all the vessels of gold and cast all of those things. And I think it'd be a challenge today to overlay all of those boards with gold and make those sockets and all of that. So it was interchangeable parts. You know, Henry Ford thought he'd really created something when he made mass production in the assembly line. But the Israelites had that figured out years before. I don't know how it worked. I don't know how they done it, but I think you could have took that tabernacle apart, moved it, and set it together, and those parts, I believe, were interchangeable. Now, that's my belief. I guess you're entitled to something different if you don't agree with me. But they had a lot of moving parts in that thing. There was a lot of wisdom involved there. But here, this is years down the road, and God said, listen, Solomon, I'm going to give you more wisdom than those men had. And not only that, you're going to have more wisdom than anybody that ever lives after you. I'm going to tell you, that's a blessing, isn't it? That's beyond just, Lord, have mercy on me. I need to know, do I turn right or do I turn left? It's beyond that. So I want us to get this picture. Solomon had his heart right. And when we have our heart right and we have our act together, we're being obedient to what God's will is, that's where the blessing can come. And it's a blessing that maketh rich. Not necessarily temporally in money, but he was wealthy in wisdom. Solomon today is, you hear expression, wisdom of Solomon or something. We're talking about incredible, God-given, a divine blessing. All right? So let's read a little more. He says, I have also given thee that which thou hast not asked. Did you know if we are faithful and we're dependable with God and we're endeavoring to live to all that we know and understand, He's going to give us stuff that we don't even ask for? He says, I'm going to given thee that which thou hast not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be any among the kings like unto thee all thy days. And if it's conditional here, and if thou wilt walk in my ways to keep my statutes and my commandments as thy father David did walk, then I will lengthen thy days. And Solomon awoke, and behold, it was a dream. And he came to Jerusalem and stood before the ark of the covenant of the Lord and offered up burnt offerings and offered peace offerings and made a feast to all his servants. So I believe Solomon was overwhelmed with gratitude and thanksgiving that God would actually shower him with this kind of blessing. Remember what Proverbs said, the blessing of the Lord maketh rich, and he addeth no sorrow with it. All of the excitement that sin has to offer has a letdown to it. Every bit of it. Every bit of gratification that sinful activities offer has an unwind, a backside. You got to recover from it. But not with the Lord. The Lord has a blessing that He is willing to add to us, and it's beyond a mercy to mercy experience. This is the point I want us to get a hold of, and I want us to dwell on this. What does it take for me to be in a place that the Lord can bless us with the power, with the anointing, with the effectiveness, with the spiritual fortitude that we need in the world we have today, all around us? So I have another one for you. Let's turn to the book of Daniel in the 3rd chapter. Solomon wasn't the only one, and unfortunately Solomon ended up a disappointment. At least he's a disappointment to me. I wanted Solomon, when I was a little boy, and my parents read Bible stories to me before I went to bed, I always wanted Solomon to straighten up and do better. But history doesn't end that way. history ends up that Solomon, he let his many wives turn his heart away from the very God that blessed him. So let's turn to Daniel, the third chapter. Here again, another familiar story. We had quite a group of young men that were taken from Jerusalem down to Babylon to become eunuchs. A lot of details there that we don't get into many times, but they were going to be taught the tongue of the Chaldean. They were going to be, they were supposed to be, we can read in the first chapter there, they were supposed to be perfect as far as humanity were. They were beautiful of countenance. They were keen of mind, keen of abilities and all of that. Take them down there, and out of the group, I don't know if there was 10 or 100, but I believe there was a lot more than the four that we have identified in this book of Daniel. But we have four of them: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. That was their Hebrew names. And here in the 16th chapter, 16th verse of the third chapter, we have the three, besides Daniel, being referred to by their Chaldean names. And they're in the setting where they've been, they're being coerced to bow down to this God that King Nebuchadnezzar had erected. Verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. So that's a pretty preposterous statement for someone that's a eunuch and a subordinate to a very powerful ruler. It's a very uncouth thing to say to someone that basically has your neck at his disposal. So, what do we know about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? I believe we know that they had a pattern of being obedient to God's will. They had rejected defiling themselves with the king's meat. They were in a place that they could enter into prayer with Daniel to where God would reveal to them a dream and the interpretation of that they didn't even know what it was. You know, somebody might dream a dream and say, well, I dreamed such and such last night. And you might have a bright idea and say, well, I'd be afraid. I think that might mean something bad. They didn't even have that to go on. But God gave them the dream that Nebuchadnezzar and the interpretation. So I believe they had a relationship with God, right? They had their life, and I believe they had been just as diligent about praying as Daniel was. And here they are in this setting, and they said, we're not careful to answer you, O king. I don't believe they were being flippant. I don't believe they were being disrespectful, except they were being very firm in their resolve. All right? So when they said, look, we're confident that God can deliver us out of that burning furnace, but if he don't, he says in the next verse, but if not, let it be known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. So now we're in a place, my experience is being tested. And look at what happened. Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed. That means he went from looking on these young men with favor and wanting to extend another opportunity. Now he's mad. I'm ready to throw them in. I don't care how smart they are or how good they've been in my kingdom. I will not stand for somebody throwing it back in my face. Put them in the furnace. Therefore, he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace seven times more than it was wont to be heated. And he commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen and their hats, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent, and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down and bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonished and rose up in haste and spake and said unto his counselors, "Did not we cast three men bound into the midst of the fire?" They answered and said unto the king, "True, O king." So why didn't they just throw them in and go on with their worshiping? I believe they were all interested to see what was happening. So the whole focus of the thing turned from this big golden image, like no one had ever seen before, to three little Hebrews being put in a furnace. The whole thing was sabotage. Even before they came back out of the fire, the whole purpose of worshiping that golden image was destroyed. Because of what? Because of three obedient young men. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king, well, read on down, 25. He answered and said, "Lo, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God." You know what happened to these men? Let's read the 29th verse. Therefore, this is the king talk. This is the one that said, "Either bow down or I'm throwing you in the fire." Now he's talking different. He says, "Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. What happened? The thing that the king designed to destroy them was the path for God to bless them. They were obedient. And what came out of that? They were promoted. Dear ones, there's a different path to follow than, "Lord, have mercy on me again." And I am very thankful for every time the Lord has mercy on us in our experience. And every time we can come to Him. But I want us to set our sights on something a little higher. You know what happens when we keep looking down? We're going to run into something. I've worked under lifts and underneath cars all my life, and I'm going to tell you, some of my hardest bumps is when I've been looking down instead of looking up. I have looked and hit my head so hard that I just wanted to sit down. Sometimes I have sat down and just put my hands in my head, my head in my hands. Take me for what I mean, not what I'm saying. I just sat down and put my head in my hands and said, "Oh, it just hurts so bad that a grown man wants to cry sometimes." And it's all because I wasn't looking where I was going. And you know, if we keep our head down in our experience and just moping along and thinking, "Oh, just one more time, I need to," please don't take this as I'm talking down if you feel like you've had to ask God for mercy. But I want us to lift our eyes up and see something better. There is a place that God wants to bless us. And He wants us, if we will learn what it takes, I believe there's a place He can shower blessings on us. Not just the blessing of "I survived," but a blessing of being promoted, if you will. Of your devotion being exhibited to others. You know, these people were afraid of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego after this. they serve a real God. This is one. I was there. How many of us have suffered a little persecution and came through it? I mean, it may be because you wouldn't tell a dirty joke, or it may be because you wouldn't do something else that your peers was doing, whether you're in school or on the job or in the community or whatever, and maybe they're starting to do something you don't approve of and say, look, folks, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to back up right here. You know, if y'all are intent to do that, I'm going to go somewhere, I'm going to do something else. But Nebuchadnezzar brought the whole kingdom, or all of the rulers. This message got sent out there. So I'd like to go to another one. Let's go to Acts, the 16th chapter. Won't read it all here, but we know the story, I believe. Acts, the 16th chapter. Paul got thrown in prison. We could begin about the 12th verse. Paul went down to Philippi, and while he was there, he 16th verse says, and it came to pass as he went to prayer, a certain damsel possessed with a spirit of divination met us, which brought her masters much gain, and the same followed Paul and us and cried, saying, these men are the servants of the Most High God. And anyway, Paul was grieved, and he commanded the spirit under the anointing of the Lord to depart from this young lady. And it brought them in conflict with her masters, and they took them to the magistrates and got them thrown in prison. Now, how many of us, if we were thrown in prison, would be saying, Lord, have mercy and get me out of here? I would. I'd be saying, Lord, help me. I need some help right now. I'm in trouble. And I don't know, but what all went on in Paul and Silas's mind, but we have the 25th verse that tells us what they did. I don't know what all went on in their head, but I know what they actually did. He says, and at midnight, Paul and Silas prayed. What'd they pray about? Lord, you see how we've been mistreated, and we're in here because we was just doing something that helped deliver this poor girl, and now we can't do what you wanted us to do because we're... I don't think that's what they was praying about. I think they were praying, thanking the Lord for the deliverance of that young lady, maybe. I think they were thanking the Lord for the plan of salvation and for the victory they had, and I believe there was some praise coming out of their lips as well as any requests they were making known. He says, at midnight, Paul and Silas prayed and sang praises unto God, and the prisoners heard. Here again, we got a captive audience in the prison. The people were hearing and listening to what Paul and Silas had to say. And suddenly there was a great earthquake, so that the foundations of the prison were shaken. The doors come open. You know what ended up happening? The jailer and his whole house got baptized and saved that night. We turned the prison into... You think the jailer was the only one that got saved that night? I got to think there was more in that prison that got saved. They would turn that jailhouse with a bunch of thugs in it into a revival meeting. The Lord's got blessings for us if we'll be faithful, if we'll be obedient, if we'll be willing to give Him the praise. The key to blessing is having victory through Jesus. I'm thankful for that song that we have. It talks about there's victory in Jesus. In Genesis, the 12th chapter, God promises Abraham that He would bless him, make his name great. Promises in the 22nd chapter that He'll multiply His seed as the stars in the heaven, innumerable. So I'd like to go now to Deuteronomy and use this for our little closing thought of how do we get in a place where we can have an experience with the Lord where He can bless us. not just have mercy on us, but bless us. I'd like to go to Deuteronomy, the 11th chapter. I'll begin reading in the 18th verse. It says, "Therefore shall ye lay up these my words in your heart and in your soul, and bind them for a sign upon your hand, that they may be as frontlets between your eyes. And ye shall teach them your children, and speaking of them when thou sittest in thy house, and when thou walkest by the way, when thou liest down and when thou risest up, and thou shalt write them upon the doorpost of thine house and upon thy gates, that your days may be multiplied, and the days of your children in the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers, to give them as the days of heaven upon the earth." So, what's the requirement here? How do we get in a place where the Lord can actually bless us as a divine compensation for faithfulness? That's what I'm thinking about. How do we get in that place? Lay up his words in your heart and in your soul. That's what he said in verse 18. Bind them for a sign upon your hand, that they may be as frontlets between your eyes. You know, a number of years ago, the WWJD became an acronym for "What Would Jesus Do?" How important it is for us to not just have a little slogan or have a little acronym, but to have that as a constant reminder. What would Jesus do? You know, I believe that if we will live in a manner where we approach all of life, what would Jesus do? I believe that we'll be in a place that God can really bless us. He says, if you will teach them your children, and speaking of them when thou sittest in your thine house, you know, we can go from this setting and say, oh, it was a good church service, and I like those people down at the church, and all of those kind of things. We can go home and become a different person and not live it at home. But he says, if you go home and teach it to your children, live it in front of them. And when you're at home, be the same kind of person you are when you're at church. Heard a preacher say, or heard someone say about a preacher that said, he didn't care how high somebody jumped when they shouted, as long as they walked straight when they hit the ground. You know, if I believe in having victory, I believe in praising God in our services, but Lord, I want your blessings. I want to live in a place that your blessings can be. I want to witness that divine compensation for faithfulness. So Lord, help me to live in a manner that you can bless me. He says, and thou shalt write them, this is talking about his laws, write them upon thy doorpost of thine house and upon thy gates. And your days may be multiplied in the days of your children in the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers to give them as the days of heaven upon earth. He goes on to say, for if ye shall diligently keep all these commandments which I command you to do them, to love the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, and to cleave unto him, then will the Lord drive out all these nations from before you, and ye shall possess greater nations and mightier than yourselves. Every place whereon the sole of your foot shall tread shall be yours in the wilderness, from the wilderness and Lebanon, from the river Euphrates, even to the uttermost sea shall your coast be. There shall no man be able to stand before you, for the Lord your God shall lay the fear of you and the dread of you upon all the land that ye shall tread upon, as he has said unto you. Behold, I set before you this day a blessing and a curse. A blessing. That's what I'm interested in. I'm interested in living a life before the Lord where he can bless me. You remember when Jacob wrestled with the angel before he went to meet Esau? He wrestled all night. And when the breaking of day came, the angel told him, "You're going to have to let me go." And Jacob said, "I will not let you go until you bless me. I want some blessings from the Lord. And I want it to be more than this blessing. Oh, I'm still alive. Well, thank the Lord." Yes, we do thank the Lord. "I'm so thankful that He has had mercy on me and spared me from destruction. But I'm interested in setting my objective on something higher than that. More than just barely staying under the radar. I want to be prosperous in my soul. I want the Lord's blessings to be in my life." So he says here, "I'm setting something before you. A blessing," he says in verse 27, "if ye obey the commandments of the Lord your God." That's the sum of the message. A blessing, if ye obey. I'm going to underline it in my Bible. A blessing, if ye obey the commandments of the Lord your God. What does it take to live in a manner that the Lord can bless you? If you obey. If you'll be faithful. I believe God has blessings as a divine compensation, a divine fulfillment for faithfulness. So my challenge to us here tonight, I know we have things that disappointing us in life. I've had my share of disappointments. I've cried some tears over things that have disappointed me majorly in life. Not just a few, but a whole bunch of tears. But I know this, that I want the Lord's blessings. And I don't want to get in a place in my experience with the Lord that I'm getting in trouble with Him. You know, I've used some school experiences I had, and I'm thankful that I had parents that instilled obedience in me at the house. Wasn't always a pleasant thing for me because I didn't come natural for me to be obedient, but my parents got it through to me pretty good. And consequently, when I went to school, I didn't have a lot of visits, if you know what I mean. But there were some of my classmates that knew the principal on a first name basis because they got to go see him on a regular basis. They were just always just barely out of trouble. And I want us to do something different with the Lord. I don't want us to just live barely out of trouble with the Lord. I want us to live higher than that. Obedience. Another scripture said obedience is better than sacrifice. That's what Samuel told Saul when he came to him and found out he hadn't been obedient. He'd been a lot better. Did you know God could have blessed Saul if he had been obedient? But he wasn't. And what's our life going to end up like? Is it just going to be from one mercy episode to another one? Or are we willing to really apply ourselves? Lord, I want to be obedient. What is it that you would have me to do? How should I conduct myself? How do I learn better to please you? I want your blessings in my life. Dear ones, I want the Lord's blessings in my life, and I desire your prayers that I'll be faithful. Pray for me.